Hey, everybody. It's in the Charlie Kirk Show. Jack Posobiec and Darren Beatty join us to talk about the balloon, Ron DeSantis, and will the United States lose its position as the world reserve currency? Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Support our program at charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Jack Posobiec is with us now. Jack, welcome to the program. You should check out Jack's podcast, Human Events Daily. Jack, I want to get to the Chinese balloon. How should we think about the Chinese balloon? And I mean, I have a lot of questions there. You're a Chinese expert, expert on the CCP. The floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Clark Kent. And I just really wanted to, just follow up on what you're saying. But I couldn't agree more about how that is something that's a struggle, right? When you're looking at suffering in the world, or you know, like children who get terminal diseases and things like this, I mean, I go back to the Book of Job a lot to get that understanding of why God allows suffering in the world, and it is one of the hardest parts of faith, 100%. When it comes to the this balloon, this platform from China, that what I'm hearing on this situation is that it's very interesting that, you know, of course, China wouldn't do something like this out of the blue, that this actually was the culmination of an escalatory trend that the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese intelligence services, Chinese military working in conjunction have conducted to the United States for years. At some points, this included small platforms, drones in places like our naval facilities on the coast, on other military facilities on other coasts. Did it occur during the Trump administration? That's obviously been this huge pushback from the Biden administration to say that this type of probing did occur. Now, obviously, we all know, by the way, that nothing like this specific event occurred during the Trump administration. We would know. Alexander Vindman would have been there to save America by telling us and blowing the whistle. But I don't think that Americans in this day and age of social media would have missed a giant balloon or a Zeppelin, which is basically what this is, the size of three school buses flying overhead and flying over our nuclear facilities. No, obviously this didn't happen while President Trump was in office. But were there smaller nibbles, escalatory events that occurred that at some point, because I don't think this is telling the narrative that actually, again, they're talking to Bloomberg, they're talking to Fox News about this, there's unnamed intelligence officials reporting that apparently things like this may have happened during the Trump administration, but apparently the Trump administration and the civilian leaders, like the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the DNI, and the president himself, were not informed that these events were taking place. And if you go back to who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs at this point, none other than General Milley, the very same General Milley who informed the world, apparently, that on his own recognizance, that he decided to take it upon himself to conduct U.S. foreign policy and U.S. domestic policy, not the duly elected president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, his own commander-in-chief, the constitutional authority, by telling the Chinese Communist Party when and if the United States was going to be conducting military action in the South China Sea or the Taiwan Strait. And apparently, it's the same individual, General Milley, who didn't want to brief the White House, didn't want the president knowing that these Chinese spy operations were going on, because he rightfully, by the way, predicted that President Trump probably would have ordered them to be blown out of the sky, as we obviously should have from day one, not on day 10.
But what is the CCP's calculation here? I don't quite understand that part. They say it's a weather balloon. I don't believe them. But was this just kind of an act of defiance? Not even defiance, but just kind of a reminder that they're in charge? I mean, what is the CCP's motive, a giant troll operation? Because they knew it was going to be discovered.
Well, Charlie, I think there's two things going on here. Number one, obviously, from their perspective, is they want to know what's going on with our nuclear facilities. They want to conduct signals collection when it comes to the types of codes that we're using, the encrypted codes that we're using for communications around these facilities. They could be using a number, by the way, of scientific sensors, not for the cloud cover, but potentially, obviously, these are our underground facilities, so they could have been using LIDAR or other sensors to look into these at a lower level, where a low and slow persistent collection platform would be much easier and gain much greater fidelity for those collection operations, rather than a high-flying satellite that may only have a very low view window as it's flying over in high Earth orbit. But there's also exercises that were held, exercises that included defense of the Pacific from Nellis Air Base that were just about 1 week prior to this. So we can be looking at it from a timing perspective that they're collecting on our exercises the way that, of course, they always collect on our exercises, but not within the continental United States. So I think we really need to look at this as a series of escalations that's been going on for years that our government has not only been gaslighting us about, but apparently they were gaslighting the previous administration about as well. And General Milley needs to absolutely be subpoenaed by this new Congress. We need all of them to be subpoenaed to understand exactly what's going on with these operations, because now it's the Chinese have been given a free hand and it's spilled over to the point where now Americans are asking, are the Chinese spying on our cell phone calls? Are they looking at what's going on? Are they sucking up all the signals that we produce on a regular basis, as it's given complete impunity to fly over the United States? And I saw people say, oh, well, it's being jammed. Well, it certainly wasn't jammed the entire time. If that thing's got burst transmission on it, which I'm sure it does, it was obviously sending back burst signals and downloaded signals to their collection platform back home. And the fact that we allowed it, Charlie, I think it really speaks to the overall emasculation of the United States, not only as a country, but specifically for our military. There was a time under the Trump administration or in the Cold War where something like this would have been shot down immediately. And we wouldn't have had to wait for local press or local, you know, folks on Twitter just to be posting about it. I think we would have shot it down and then we would have asked them what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such an insult to all of us. As a layman, someone who's not been in the military, I look at this and it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. And I feel as if the regime doesn't care to explain or elaborate. What's the explanation, Jack, that they've given that we allowed them to complete their tour of the United States and then shoot it out over water? They were that worried about debris hurting somebody. Is that right?
Well, Charlie, yeah, they're saying, oh, we can reduce the risk to zero. But I mean, there's massive swaths of Alaska, of the Yukon wilderness that this flew over in Western Canada, Montana itself, that with the Aleutian Islands, where it easily could have been shot down prior to all of this. We're told they were tracking it for something like 10 days. But we know that Blinken had his trip coming up, and that's why they didn't want to upset the emperor. He has his audience with the emperor. And of course, Charlie, the reason that doesn't make sense is because this is not how a sovereign nation acts. This is how a vassal state acts when our emperor from afar. What I mean by that is that, I mean, we're owned. We are owned, our government's owned, our military obviously is kowtowing to this. This is how a lesser country responds to a greater country.
I'm afraid you're right, Jack. And it's just infuriating for those of us that are not in the military circles. I'm losing complete faith in the United States military. Not the enlisted, not this, but where's our $1 trillion going exactly? $1 trillion
a year. And they defeat it with a hot air balloon.
Yeah, $1 trillion a year for us to watch a balloon meander across the United
States.
Because,
Charlie, you need the will to act. You need the will to act.
That's exactly right. And the American elite, they have the will to assimilate with the CCP because they want to be rich and they don't love America. Did you know that gold was the best performing asset in 2022? Through all record-breaking inflation rates, crashing markets, and crypto scams, there is one asset that held its own. It is gold. Noble Gold Investments helps thousands of clients buy real physical gold last year. According to the longtermtrends.net, gold outperformed the S&P 500, Dow, and Bitcoin in 2022. Had you invested in the S&P 500 a year ago, you'd be down more than 20%. If you invested in Bitcoin a year ago, you'd be down more than 65%. If you invested in Dow a year ago, you'd be down almost 10%. Yes, gold has outperformed all of them in 2022, and silver was not far behind. So what are you waiting for? Join the thousands of others by opening a gold IRA or silver IRA with Noble Gold Investments. You need assets you can touch. Invest with Noble Gold Investments before the end of this month. You'll bag a free 1/4 ounce American Gold Eagle coin with every qualified IRA of $50,000 or more. You can't go wrong with Noble Gold Investments and their thousands of 5-star reviews. So check it out right now, Noble Gold Investments. I want to play a piece of tape here, Jack, and get your reaction. This is Senator Tom Cotton talking about how, hey, if you're fired up about the balloon, wait till I tell you about TikTok. Play cut two.
China has been waging a cold war against the United States for decades. And unfortunately, not many of our leaders have acknowledged that. They want to deny that it's happening. But when a nation like China is waging a cold war against us, the only choice is whether to win or to lose. I think this spy balloon that so vividly went across America is a very high profile reminder to Americans about what the Chinese communists have been up to. Because I got to tell your viewers, if they're worried about a spy balloon flying across middle America, let me tell them about the TikTok app that they may have on their phone and what it means for their security and their privacy and that of their children as well.
Yeah, and not to mention TikTok is turning kids trans. Jack, we're already in a cold war, if not a seeming an increasingly hot war with the CCP. But there seems to be a tension here. Middle America knows the threat that the CCP poses, but our athletic elite, our academic elite, our financial elite, our technological elite, and our political elite, they want to grow warmer and closer with China. Explain.
Well, Charlie, that's simple, because Middle America can correctly observe and sense the weakness. And Americans detest weakness. Americans detest losing, as a certain general once told us. They can detect strength. They can sense when someone is strong. They can sense when we're getting weaker. They can sense when we're in a country where it seems like basic things that we all used to take for granted, like supply chains or trains running on time, or buildings that wouldn't collapse, airports malfunctioning, airlines malfunctioning all the time, seem to be in the headlines every single day. Basic things that we used to just take for granted as matters of routine are all seemingly falling apart because we're living through the collapse of complex systems. Meanwhile, we see countries like the People's Republic of China, we see others that are completely on the rise, and they're beginning not only to dominate us they're certainly challenging us economically around the world. They're challenging us when it comes to the international financial system. They're setting up One Belt, One Road around the world. They're building now shipyards and ports in the Caribbean. They're building a port at Tierra del Fuego down at the southern tip of South America. So they're going to be having naval ports within the Atlantic Ocean. And I certainly hope that that's something that helps Americans wake up to this. But then also to fly a low and slow spy platform, the skyship, across the United States in such a dramatic fashion. It reminds me of when Teddy Roosevelt sailed the Great White Fleet around the world to say that America has arrived as a global power. Mm-hmm. China sending this across the United States, it is a Sputnik moment.
That's in your opinion the intent. You think this is a physical metaphor to show America the CCP is in charge, we have arrived, we are now above you in the hierarchy. The very same people that gave us the virus that was never held accountable, that's putting fentanyl into our country and killing our children, they're now doing the CCP Goodyear blimp equivalent. Is that right?
I mean, Charlie, we're going to have the Super Bowl this weekend. When the blimp flies over, we know that it's meant for the people to see it. When this blimp from the Chinese Communist Party flew over, it was meant for people to see it as well. And I think they're sending a message. I think they're sending a very clear message. Mm-hmm. And I certainly hope that American leaders would take this much more seriously. And instead of simply kowtowing and going into this monetary pipeline that they've built going back to the 1990s, and we described this on Human Events Daily when we did the China Files, that there was sort of this deal made with the Chinese Communist Party between our elites following the events of Tiananmen Square, particularly, where they would become the manufacturing hub for the world and the West would allow Western capital and Western IP intellectual property to be sent there with the hopes of increasing the manufacturing. Of course, all our jobs go over there. they become the engine of the world. And but in, and then we, you know, the elites gain the profit. The elites are the ones who benefit from all of this. We gut the middle America, we gut the Midwest, we gut the South, and the steel belt becomes the rust belt. And in the midst of all of this, it's done by policy because there are people making billions of dollars over this. But along the way, China decided, wait a minute, what if we don't want to be the junior partner anymore? Maybe we want to be the senior partner. And we used to have a president that talked about how all of these industries that we were shipping overseas were actually a national security concern. And we didn't take it seriously until all of a sudden a virus comes again from the same country. And we realized that we are reliant
on them. So illuminating where we have leaders that get so fired up because Ukraine gets invaded. And yet our own borders get violated by our greatest enemy, the CCP. And it's just kind of passively addressed. Like, oh, yeah, you know, Zelensky's our priority. Hey, if that balloon got too close to Kyiv, they would have shot it down. Maybe that's why they shot it down once over the Atlantic. Can't get too close to Ukraine.
It's on the way, right?
What have you done to preserve your family's legacy? It's one of the most important things you can do. Well, think of all the time and money that went into cataloging and remembering your wedding, your high school or college graduation, your sports memories, your vacations. What if it all just disappeared? Legacy Box is on a mission to make sure that all your family's recorded moments are protected forever. What important memories in your family history were captured on an analog media such as film reels or tapes? What memories or moments do you have to share with future generations in your family? Go to legacybox.com/Kirk to shop this exclusive offer. That is legacybox.com/Kirk. You owe it to your family to safeguard your memories. Don't let your photos continue to fade. Legacybox.com/Charlie. That is legacybox.com/Charlie to shop this exclusive offer. Easy to use, all in America, great company. I've used it and you should as well. Legacybox.com/Charlie. Your family's memories are worthy and deserving of protection. So invest in future generations. Visit legacybox.com/Charlie to shop this exclusive offer. That is legacybox.com/Charlie. Darren Beatty joins us now from revolver.news. Darren, welcome back to the program. There are two pieces I want to explore with you. The first one is a piece where you say, sorry, Zero Hedge, for better or for worse, the U.S. dollar will remain the king of currencies. Walk us through it.
Yes. Well, I think it's important to note what's at stake in a piece like this, because it gets somewhat academic. And, you know, it's written by a very, very high level and extremely intelligent economist who, again, given the political pressures in our clown world dystopia, is not able to write under his own name, which is a shame, because this is a piece that's more sophisticated than anything you'll find in The Economist. It's an excellent analysis on an important topic written by an expert who can't publish on his name, and something that should be entirely uncontroversial. Mm-hmm. But what is this about? So, you know, I think it, what it does, other than sort of the economic argument and sort of geopolitical argument, it addresses a psychological tendency on the right that I'm a victim of, and I think, you know, a lot of people who are who have common sense and a sense of internal sense of justice have, which is that we see the obvious decline, precipitous decline in standards of living in our country. We see the demotion from first world country to what in many cases can look like a third world status.
Yes, that's
we
right.
We see these horrifying and really tragic clips of what life looks like on the streets in like Philadelphia. And, you know, it could be it invokes our notion of what, you know, what Somalia would look like, or we see the fentanyl-addled communities in San Francisco, and the, you know, the people defecating on the streets, and we see widespread incompetence. We have a senescent leader who can't remember his name half the time, and we see all of these factors cumulatively, and we say the system doesn't make any sense. It's all going to collapse soon. And the thing is that type of inference is not as sound as we would think or maybe we would like, because for better or worse, the factors that are involved in the standard of living issues that I described are much further removed from the factors that are essentially pertinent to maintaining America's position as a geopolitical superpower. And I think this is especially so when it comes to the question of whether America can or will maintain the dollar, will maintain a global reserve status indefinitely, meaning that basically dollars is what people, you know, third parties, that, you know, other countries will use in a lot of transactions. They'll sit on dollars as basically a safe currency when times are in trouble. And the reason they do that, there are a couple reasons, but the principal reason is, as bad as our system is, it still kind of functions better than the alternative systems. Like we
I think that's interesting, just to kind of recenter it for our audience. So what you're saying, though, is that there is not an inevitable transition that will happen from the United States dollar being the world reserve currency to the yuan.
No, and definitely not. And, you know, even less so to, say, a Russian currency or less so to the euro. And again, this is where we might get into some of the economic explanations there. But, you know, one thing that's important to note other than that is that China has exhibited zero interest in wanting to establish an alternative.
That's interesting.
You see that,
too much responsibility?
Well, there are a number of factors. One is, it's actually counter. It's not a good thing to be the world's reserve currency if you're a manufacturing and export-based economy, because you basically want
exactly
your currency
right.
to be weaker. That gets into the whole like currency thing. Why Trump kept complaining that China was debasing its currency and screwing us over in trade. Like, so because Trump his mindset is always oriented by, well, what makes America great would be having a strong manufacturing base, a strong industrial base, export-based economy, which is not quite the reality in the United States anymore, unfortunately. But in China, it still is. And there are a lot of very powerful domestic industries like that rely on imports that would not want to let go of the dollar status for, you know, analogous and reciprocal reasons. So in China, they don't want the burden of the reserve currency for that reason. And in their behavior, you know, I know you've talked about the Belt and Road Enterprise, mm-hmm. which is a very important, really kind of historic move on the part of China to gain geopolitical influence in their broader region. And, you know, when they get leverage over these countries for, you know, construction projects and so forth, it's interesting. They never use that leverage in order to force other countries to pay debt in their own currency, which is interesting. You know, if they were interested in, you know, building up the leverage of their currency, at the very least, it would be a no-brainer to say, okay, so-and-so country that we've basically debt trapped, you have to use our currency now to pay us back the debt. They're not really doing that. And so, and in terms of global reserve currency holdings, the dollar supersedes any other rivals by far. The Russia currency is a total joke. The EU has a lot of the same, you know, inflation problems we do. That's not going to be anything. So the thing is, you can look at the problems in the United States, but you don't understand there's no other currency that even comes close. And historically, when you look at what it takes to actually replace one currency with another, we're nowhere near close to that either. There's another component of the analysis that's important, but again, it gets into the weeds, but it is actually an important point, maybe the most important.
Well,
in the
so what you're saying, Darren, and I'm just trying to glean this, is that this actually is a good piece of good news. I say that hesitantly because everything is just so negative. It's nonstop negative, negative, negative. The argument you're making is, look, we actually, the US dollar is far more durable and resilient and has more staying power than some of the chattering class on CNBC might lead you to believe.
Absolutely. And I think to the extent that we can extrapolate that from saying, you know, we can't infer from the collapse in standard of living, that America's geopolitical superpower status will be lost generally, to the extent you can extrapolate that. That, you know, it's up for the audience to decide whether that's good news. And, you know, to decide whether it's good news, you have to decide, is America still a positive influence on the world? Like, is it a good thing that we maintain superpower? Because, it's questionable whether we're using that influence for good or not. And there's also a question of whether it's a good thing for the average American worker that we maintain reserve currency status. There are several economists who are deeply America first, who question whether we want to keep the reserve currency status precisely for the kind of manufacturing.
Well, let me tell you why I think they're wrong. I think that property values profit estimates on publicly traded securities, there's a 20 to 30% baked in markup that people are willing to put their liquidity into the U.S. homeland because we are the world's reserve currency. So I don't think it's a good thing for a teacher in Dayton, Ohio, for the market to tank 20% because investors in Hong Kong and Dubai all of a sudden say, well, they're no longer the world's reserve currency. You see what I'm saying? Like, there is a baked in premium to a higher than expected standard of living when you are the world reserve currency. And there would be a rather cataclysmic correction. But you're right. From a manufacturing side, you want to almost deteriorate your currency. But I think there's got to be some balance there, right? Because
there's winners and losers in argument. But I think on the whole, it's good news from the standpoint of kind of the major stakeholders in American power.
I think that's right.
The dollar will remain strong. And, but again, I think you see this everywhere on the right, that there's this real inclination toward sort of apocalyptic fantasies, because it appeals to people's inherent sense of justice. Like, if things are so incompetent and ridiculous, they have to collapse, right? It's like, it's very hard to process mentally that the connection between the factors that it will remain, contribute to the strong dollar and America's geopolitical status are actually quite far removed from the factors that are relevant to the standard of living and well-being of average Americans.
So let me add on to that. What you're also saying, though, Darren, is with proper leadership and a regime that listens to their citizens with a moral philosophical base, we could turn this thing around, is what you're also saying, is that this thing is waiting to be revitalized, is that regardless of the damage that is done by this current, group of deep state sycophants, that with the right leadership and the right agenda, we actually can get back to some form of prosperity, which would be amazing. Darren, tell us about your piece with Ron DeSantis. Tell us.
Well, I'm very happy about this piece. And one of the subjects of the piece, the hero, shall we say, other than DeSantis himself, Chris Rufo, said it's the best analysis he's seen by far on the strategy behind some of the recent moves by the DeSantis administration. And specifically, this is about the takeover of this college in Florida that the left is absolutely apoplectic about. I was just looking at Twitter recently. They're going nuts about it, in particular, the analysis that we just did at Revolver.News. And in a nutshell, I mean, we could get into the specifics of what they're doing, but I think the general approach is really important to understand, because there's no law that says only DeSantis can be doing these things. In fact, we call out Tennessee, which has a Republican governor. They can and should and really must do something similar, and they're not. And that is to understand these school boards, the members, they're appointed by a governor. They're fundamentally political positions. There's simply no excuse for any GOP governor not to treat all governor appointed positions as political and use them as instruments to fight back against this national endemic of wokeness. And DeSantis has done this to great effect. And really, it's just a test case. It's a trial balloon, to use that phrase, of how it could be expanded throughout the education sector in Florida. Simply put, these college board positions are political, and he decided, God forbid, to appoint people who actually have a political orientation that is against indoctrinating students into anti-American woke nonsense and putting people that have a more pro-education, pro-America, really kind of pro-intellectual perspective. It's easy, it's simple, but you know, only DeSantis is really doing it at the highest and most aggressive level. And I think it's time for other governors to follow suit and step up and just to pluck off this low-hanging fruit, which should be a no-brainer for any Republican governor.
So tell me, Darren, why do you think other Republican governors have refused to do that?
You know, I to answer that question fully and adequately, I think we need to do it case by case. I suspect generally it's just that, you know, the type of standard Republican is just really like just profoundly uncreative. Like it's probably not even occurred to most of these people that you can simply, you know, use your authority as governor to totally recapture institutions in the way that DeSantis just did with this new college in Florida. I mean, there are some other considerations like these type of appointments, I think typically are reserved to like reward donors and things like this. But even that, it's like it's not mutually exclusive and it doesn't really explain why the governors have not fully availed themselves of these powers. And also, like if you do that, that would actually be doing something meaningful and therefore you'll get attacked by the media. And unfortunately, a lot of these GOP governors are probably so weak and pathetic, they don't want any of the publicity that comes with that. I don't know, but I think they definitely need to be called out for it because the model is there. DeSantis is doing it, and it's simply a no-brainer in some of these states, including Tennessee.
So, Darren, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to read a statement because you're very careful at Revolver.News on who you platform and who you think is acting in a heroic way. Is that fair to say? I mean, you're very careful,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And so, yeah. So Trump this last weekend said this about Ron DeSantis. He said that he is a rhino globalist. I want to make sure I get the words right. Okay. He said that the revelations about Ron DeSanctimonious doing far worse than other Republican governors, including that he's unapologetically shut down Florida speeches. And he said that that's actually not this one. He did call him a rhino globalist than a different one. So, Darren, what is your thought? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, these are sort of proto campaign shots. And I mean, that's the nature of politics. You know, Trump wouldn't have been president if he didn't have that kind of combative spirit. And, you know, I've been public. I'm pro Trump and I support Trump in 2024. But I mean, that doesn't mean that we can't acknowledge and celebrate this really kind of innovative and effective approach that Governor DeSantis has taken to governance in Florida. I think that he's done so much, but I mean, this shows that there's so much, you know, so much room to go. You know, I think people diminish DeSantis when they think, oh, he's just a one-hit wonder in terms of his COVID policy. There's a lot more to do and there's a lot more time. There's no rush for him. That's what I'm saying. He can solidify his status as one of the greatest governors in recent American history and exercise, indulge his presidential ambitions later. I think now is the time for Trump in 2024 as far as presidential is concerned. But I don't think it's really productive or necessary, you know, people getting into this Trump versus DeSantis thing. DeSantis hasn't even announced yet. So maybe it's different after he does, if he does. But till now, I think we can just celebrate DeSantis for what he is, which is a very, very effective and competent governor in Florida.
And the new college example is fabulous. Darren, God bless you. Wonderful coverage, Revolver.News. Darren, I want to have you back when you're ready to talk about the meme case, because we want
absolutely
to do, I want to do something in harmony with you. We haven't made that announcement yet of how we're going to help. I've been waiting. So once you're ready to do that piece, come right back on. We'll do a big thing on it, okay?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.